The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are a couple of our resident certified financial planners, Tyler Cook and Cameron Utley. And today we're talking about year-end deadlines. This is a really good show, I think, for the average person trying to figure out where to start to get ready for tax season, how to store documents, all kinds of good stuff. So I'd like to get into it right away and start with tax planning strategies. Always a big one at the end of the year for us, I think. But from the every person's point of view, is there a great way to sort of, number one, organize your taxes? Is there a best practice? You know, I know you guys are a big proponent of technology. What would we tell people first about organizing your taxes, your documents?
Yeah, first it depends on how you're paid. So if you have a W-2 type job where you get a pay stub, it's a great time of year to sit down and look at the pay stub, review your income, review your tax withholdings. We'll get into other things with retirement planning here in a little bit, but that's one way to go about it. If you're a business owner, it's a little more challenging because you need to be actually ongoing financial statements to be prepared where you can actually review income statements, balance sheets to see where your income and expenses are, but that takes work. And I see a lot of business owners make the mistake of trying to do it all themselves, and then they're playing catch up. And then what comes next this time of year? You're into the holidays. Before you know it, calendar year's closed, and now you're into April filing tax extensions and always kind of just trying to play catch up. But if you can do it on a regular routine basis to review your income, especially for a business owner, and your expenses, that gives you a better idea on the tax side of where you might be, because right now you should be looking at, where is my last dollar taxed? What bracket am I going to be in at the end of the year? It's all about the last dollar that you earn, and that ends up being which marginal bracket you're in. So getting organized, we talk about that constantly. That's a key theme with financial planning. So if you're looking at a pay stub, look at what you've made versus what you've withheld. If you're a business owner, start putting together those financial statements.
And I think the other thing is, a lot of times we talk about with our clients that by default, most people look at tax planning looking in the past. We try to look moving forward. So just thinking about not just what has already occurred this year, what's cemented with what I owe for taxes or what I'm going to owe, but are there going to be any surprises before the end of the year? Year-end bonus, work changes, did I change employers this year? Those are all things to keep in mind, as we'll get into as well, with other aspects, especially if you did change jobs this year, things to be mindful for when you go to talk with your CPA or your tax preparer about, you know, year-end tax estimates.
And we're not CPAs, but this is a lot of what you do for our clients. So how can somebody pay their taxes early, for instance, to save more on their taxes?
I wouldn't pay them early. I'm a big proponent of don't pay till you have to.
Okay.
Right. So, I mean, but even planning with early is really what you're going with that.
Interrupt so. You. Sorry, but even with the fear of like cybersecurity, that's something that I was actually frauded through the IRS, and I was told to file early, be one of the first ones to e-file. Is that not a good idea?
Yeah. So there's I kind of go back and forth on that. There's two schools of thought. Some say if you file early, then you reduce your chance of somebody else doing it in your case, right? And trying to get your refund before you do it. There's value there or legitimacy to that one. The other one is if you file extensions, then you open yourself up to possible audits. I'm not sure either of those are really true. I think you just got to stay proactive throughout that. And so at the end of the year, the theme of today's show, right? Once the calendar year changes over, there's a few things you can do in the following calendar year to affect this year's tax bill, but most of the options are gone. We'll get into what you can do in the kind of that carryover method. But December 31st is really the deadline for a lot of big decisions. And I'll go back to the business owner conversation. We work with a lot of business owners. Right now, if you don't know where your numbers are, you're kind of putting yourself behind the eight ball again to get down to that last minute decision. But when you talk about paying taxes early, Tracy, one of those things is more about, from a business expense standpoint, do I have a lot of expenses coming up? in January and February that I could accelerate now, pay it early, buy the equipment today, whatever it might be, and capitalize on that tax deduction. We know sitting here today, going into next year, 2025, tax law is the same as this year. But sitting here a year from now, if we're doing this podcast a year from now in 2025, there's going to be a lot of those conversations going on because as it sits right now, the tax law will change if Congress can't act, right? If there's not a bipartisan type venture that either extends the current tax law or has a new tax law put together. So if you're not aware of those things and not paying attention to it, then the ship's going to sail, and to your point, Cameron, it's always in arrears and you're playing catch up.
So from the business, not the business perspective, from an individual's perspective, give me three or four tips to lowering your tax bracket.
So the one is with itemized deductions. So a lot of, like, again, maybe to jump into one of those year-end deadlines, a popular one is charitable giving. I know that the holidays often springs that mentality, but to an extent, I think there's a coincidence that it aligns with the end of the year because a lot of the year-end, a lot of the deadlines for making charitable contributions for tax purposes or getting at least getting the deduction for it for that tax year is December 31st. So if you're thinking of making a, you know, there's a lot of scenarios where it makes sense, a lot of where it might not. But if you're thinking of making a large charitable contribution or even small, being aware of the rules around itemized deductions, I know we don't like to give numbers here on the podcast, but there's a difference of do I take the standard deduction, which everyone has the option to, or do you itemize? So you can add up, there's a list of things you can itemize on your taxes that if it's greater than that standard deduction, well, you'd rather take more deductions than less, and you can do it in that case. But if it's if your itemized deductions, charitable contributions, medical expenses, mortgage interest, state and local taxes, if those are less than that standard deduction, well, then you would take the standard in that case. So that's one thing I think of.
I was just going to ask you something as you were talking. I didn't want to interrupt you. So the itemizing and the standard deduction, isn't like $400 a year that you don't have to claim beyond $400 a year? You do have to claim it?
For charitable giving? Yeah, there's a new tax law that it's in the $300-$400 range where you can...
Without receipts.
Yeah, essentially not itemized, but still get a tax benefit from the charitable giving. But where Cameron's going with it is it's harder and harder to qualify, or I guess to take the itemized approach now because the standard deduction is the highest it's ever been. It's at, what, $27,000, something like that, $29,000 next year, and even higher with a few other elements to it. So it's getting harder and harder for people to be able to deduct things like their charitable gifts. For example, if you go out and donate $5,000 to a charity, but you take the standard deduction, you got zero tax benefit for that $5,000 gift to charity. That's not the point of the gift, of course. The point of the gift was to make your gift to the charity you wanted it to, but people often overlook that piece. So the IRS did put a little few hundred dollar incentive in there that you can still get some tax break for it, even if you don't itemize.
And medical bills, you know, explain how people can write off their medical expenses out of pocket.
Yeah, so there's a threshold to be able to even deduct a penny of medical expenses. It has to exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So just generally think, not exactly this, but just think of if you add up all the income sources for yourself for the year, if you have to take 7.5% of that, that's roughly how much you have to incur in medical expenses out of pocket before you can start deducting additional medical expenses. So, you know, if you have $100,000 of income, let's say 7.5% of that's $7,500. If you had $10,000 in medical expenses, you could deduct the $2,500.
And that's medical, dental, prescription, optical, what else? Physical therapy.
Kids.
Of course,
If you're older and you have long-term care expenses, those could qualify as well. You know, if you're paying for at-home care.
Yep. What about ancillary items for long-term care? You know, like adult diapers, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, all of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a whole list. Go to the IRS website. There's thousands of things. Yeah.
Okay. Great. So that's some good information for end of year tax. And it starts with good organization. You know, knowing where all your stuff is, having all your paperwork in place. What are the tax deadlines for businesses and for individuals? Just for people to remember.
Well, planning wise, it's really December 31st, unless you're on a different fiscal year for your business. But most people are on that calendar year timeline. And then some of the business things carry over into the retirement planning piece, which we will get into next. But there's some carryover things along with some healthcare things you can do in the following calendar year.
Okay. Retirement contributions, that's the next topic. How much more can somebody contribute to their retirement accounts before the year ends?
Well, it depends on the max, right? So where, how much have you done so far and what's the IRS maximum that's stated? So it depends on it, whether it's an IRA or a 401k.
What's
or
the max?
For which? IRA is 7,000.
Yep.
Plus, there's, again, there's some other numbers to that
so
with the catch-ups.
So 401k is?
23,000.
Okay. Yep. And those are really the two main, aren't they?
Yeah, those are the big ones.
One thing to be, I think, to keep in mind, to your point, there are a few caveats. For instance, if you're this year, if you're 50 or older, you get a catch-up for your IRA and a catch-up for your 401k if you're making those type of contributions. So
come with fries? what's a catch-up?
Yeah.
Does that include traditional IRAs too, or just Roth?
Whatever, yeah, any kind of IRA, you get that. You get a certain catch-up. So then, again, just Google whatever that year's is for this year. It's $1,000 for an IRA, $6,500 for your 401k. So if you are trying to maximize your 401k and you're 60, you could put as much as $30,500 away this year.
Yeah, the whole point of that catch-up contribution is the IRS said, all right, well, people need to catch up on their savings, what they didn't do maybe in the early years. So now let's increase their maximum threshold compared to somebody like Cameron. Early in his career, he can only cap out at that 23.
Great. Is converting a Roth IRA, so let me backtrack. If you have let's just say you have a 401k with a former employer that you want to roll into your current 401k, should you do that at a certain time of the year, or is it smart to if you're going to do it, that is to say, if you're going to do it, is there a time of the year that's best to convert that?
Not necessarily. So that's different than a conversion. That's two
so
separate topics.
So what about Roth conversions? Should those be done at the end of the year?
Yeah, conversions have that December 31st deadline if you want to realize that tax event in that calendar year. So I just had that conversation today actually with somebody. So it made sense. They had a lower income year. It made sense to do the Roth conversion this year, a little more than we would have done before. Put that money in a tax-free bucket for the rest of their lives to grow and pay the taxes today. So that's a year-end deadline. But on the transferring of 401ks in and out of employers or leaving it at an employer, that's a whole other conversation as far as timeline, but that's not dictated by a hard deadline.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Juking to insurance, we've been talking a lot about insurance coverage, different types of insurance. We have quite a few podcasts if our followers want to kind of check into those. Looking specifically at flexible spending accounts, when we're thinking about end-of-year deadlines and maybe even HSAs, I'm not sure. So let's kind of review that for people.
So you remember back to the open enrollment podcast that we went through, FSA, remember the S matters between FSA and HSA. The S in FSA is spending account. HSA, it's a savings account. So in this FSA, the flexible spending account, it's a use it or lose it. You have to use that benefit, whatever you elected for this year, you have to use all of it or you lose access to it. Now there's, I think you get $600 you can carry in the future years, but you have to use it that next calendar year. Versus an HSA, whatever you put in, it's your money forever.
So with the FSAs, and I've never had exposure to those before, December 31st, it's gone if you don't use it.
There's a little carryover. Right? The IRS gives you a little carryover to, as far as when to use that money. But to Cameron's point, the HSA is, I think, more flexible than this flexible spending account because you actually get to keep the money forever and use it wherever you want it to.
Does it just automatically roll into the next year?
Think of it like an IRA. The HSA is like an IRA for healthcare.
Okay.
Flexible spending is kind of like, it's calendar year type thing. Really want to try to time your medical expenses correctly. I mean, you could even buy Advil, right, Tylenol with your FSA.
Wow.
So you can buy over-the-counter
Band-aids.
Type stuff. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah,
anything
that qualifies.
Oriented.
Yeah. Yep. There's also a dependent care FSA, which is related to child care. So we use that for my son, for example, and get to pay a portion of our outrageous daycare costs with tax-free money. That's the idea.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Okay. How should people plan if they've I can't even imagine that I would choose an FSA over an HSA, I guess, unless they're not available to you, right? But if you have an FSA and you don't have a lot of medical expenses, how much should you preemptively consider putting into that account in the next year? How do you figure, what's that formula?
Maybe people don't think this way, but I have to believe most people who have insurance and have health insurance and use it probably have, if you're on the same plan as you were last year, let's say, I got to believe you have a pretty good pulse on what you wrote a check for or used, spent on the credit card. So just going back and reviewing old statements or however you track your health and medical expenses.
6 months, a year.
I would go a year because that's what you know. Right now, a lot at the end of the year, a lot of people go through open enrollment. Mm-hmm. That's when you get to make that one-time election of how much you're going to put in the FSA. And I would usually suggest people go back and look at the previous 12 months. What did I spend last year on healthcare out of pocket? And elect that. If it's going to be relatively a similar year health-wise, to elect the same amount for that next year.
Yeah, it's hard. People's mindset is they want to see the biggest paycheck they can, right, on a month-to-month or weekly basis, however you're paid, whatever it is. And so with these FSA accounts, you have to elect now, like during open enrollment for a lot of people, what you want to start contributing to the account for the next calendar year, which reduces your pay, right, immediately. So January rolls around, you said, okay, I'm going to put $3,000, whatever the number is. I think it's $2,500 for the healthcare one. Mm-hmm. So now every paycheck starts to get reduced, right? Take that $2,500, divide it by your pay frequency. That amount's going to be out of your pay, so you're not going to see it in your account. No, that's the point of it. So it's a tax deduction. And now it's in this other category that has to be used for the healthcare expenses. So you're going to spend the money anyways. So if you can get your mind wrapped around you're paying yourself first is what you're doing, and you're using tax-free money on the back end to actually buy these things, you're going to be coming out ahead quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So, but it's like
that would be difficult this. Though. If you, if you are a person who typically doesn't have any health issues, then you have an off year, that would be tough to plan for.
You can find ways to spend it, right? I mean, buy a lifetime supply of Advil. I'm not joking. Like, you really could. You could find ways to buy stuff you're going to use that you know you're going to use.
I think, and then Cole brought it up on when him and I were in that open enrollment.
Christmas stockings. Everybody gets a free bottle of Advil.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, go get some stocking stuffers. That would be a good idea. But there are websites out there that you can go and that, you know, they'll say you can go down, filter by FSA approved items. And
Amazon.
Amazon. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You can do that on Amazon.
That's
great.
Yeah,
that's great.
All the pharmacy stores, I think you can filter by FSA eligible, and you can go down and just spend it, and you can link your credit card they give you for your FSA to it.
Oh, that's seamless. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that probably takes a lot of the stress out of trying to figure it out. That's awesome. So we just talked about health savings accounts. I want to go to investment portfolios, and I'm operating off a list. Obviously, I'm not a CFP, so I've got some bullet points I want to review with you, and these are included. So assessing asset allocation, do you adjust your investments based on your current goals for the next year, or do you just kind of leave those, let it ride? I mean, we talk a lot about it being, you know, a marathon. Right, and not obsessing over the statements, and especially in a political year. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that, you know, we should be doing with regard to our investments?
That's an ongoing thing, right? It's a proactive approach. You're constantly aware of it. Doesn't mean you're having to make changes to the allocation, but really goes back to resetting the calendar year when people reset their mindset on what their goals are. It's a great time to revisit allocation and just in those conversations. But we have a deliberate quarterly schedule we set out for our clients to make sure we talk about these things regularly, and the allocation and, you know, the cash flow, people's net worth, investments, that's constantly on our list throughout the year, so we don't overlook anything. But it's also important, because it is right in front of us constantly, to also not react emotionally. So obviously it's being an election year and whatever else comes next, there's going to be those moments. But if you are ahead of that game and focus on the allocation, then you can weather these ups and downs, right?
Yeah, reacting, I learned Monday, reacting could cause a massive loss in a very short amount of time of gains in the market if you react. So yep.
The worst days in the market are often followed by the best.
Yep.
So just, you know, open the statements and file them away.
Yeah, but the allocation is the key, Tracy. That is the key. Mm-hmm. Focusing on the allocation, making sure that still matches what your goals are and your cash flow needs, that's paramount.
Mm-hmm. And don't get hung up on the current TikTok craze, and
please don't.
Yeah, stay off of social media.
Yeah.
Okay, year-end deadlines for estate planning. Reviewing estate documents, that's a big one, and I think we're all petri dishes for that, no matter what age or where you are in life, whether you've got kids or grown kids. That's something that people don't realize you should be reviewing. How often? A year? Every year? Every couple of years?
Every couple of years, and obviously when life events happen. That's a good frequency. There's no year-end deadline to that piece, but with the estate plan, there is a deadline with the annual gifting. So people gifting money to their friends, family, whoever, there's annual exclusions to reset every calendar year. So you got to pay attention to those. Right now it's what, $18,000?
Yep.
Per person you can gift?
Yep.
Still waiting, Cameron.
No taxes.
No taxes. Yeah,
they're
no reporting,
not taxed.
No,
you're not taxed.
Correct. That's right, both ends.
It's a tax-free party for everybody.
And if you're married, you can do what's called gift splitting. which allows 36,000, then there's a little more filing requirements with that one, but there's no tax actually due.
Yeah. And I think we would probably, I think most of the planners in our office would admit that estate plan is, for a new person who walks in the door, estate plan is probably the one thing we can count on that that individual not having done yet in their plan. One thing I often pitch to clients, and they can use part of their gift exclusion for that every year, is as we're, you know, hitting the holiday season, is maybe not the most fun gift, but you could gift, you know, the cost of getting an estate plan done, whether that's, you know, however much that costs where you're at, however generous you're feeling that year, you know, you can go online and do ones for relatively an inexpensive cost, or go to the attorney route, which is what we would suggest, but it is more expensive. But that could be a nice fun gift if you're looking to, you know, pay it forward to, mm-hmm. to your kids or grandkids.
Yeah.
No tax deduction. Just want to be clear on that. Yep. No tax deduction for your gift. It's just it's not
heart.
Taxable.
It's all from the heart.
It is from the heart.
That's
yeah.
right.
Okay.
Yep.
We talked about tax strategies as far as gifting is concerned. What about education savings plans?
Yeah, there's a year-end deadline for that. So think of 529 plans.
Yeah,
529 plans. Tax advantage ways to save for college. Now you can even, it's even through K-12 expenses for private school. They've expanded the rules on the back end for if money's left over, you can actually put some into a Roth IRA. But right in front of most people coming up on the year end, it would be, do you want to contribute to your kids, grandkids, relatives, 529 plan, and then get a potentially state tax deduction if your state has an income tax.
Another fun way to use your annual gift exemption is to, you know, if you have family and friends who have kids, or if you have kids and have family and friends who are looking to get a gift for your children, a lot of states do offer, whether it's you just send them a link, or whether they just give you the money to put in the account, there are ways you can have family and friends make contributions to 529 plans.
I think it was you I was talking to last week about this. Can you open a 529 for somebody else? Wasn't it you? Was it you and I that was talking?
Yeah. I guess.
Yeah, there's rules on how far like down the family tree you can go, but yes, you can. Yeah.
So if you have a grandchild that is either in utero or yep. not even planned, you can open. I could open a 529 for that
correct
individual.
Mm-hmm. And then
would
you change
be in
the
my
beneficiary?
Social?
Yeah, you tie to your name, then you change the beneficiary once the newborn arrives.
Is that kind of savings account something that's just sort of subjective to your cash flow, or is there a great number?
So it's definitely lower on the list. Retirement's the priority. Make sure that's on track first. Debt reduction goals, cash flow needs, things like that. Then you get into saving for college.
You mean don't give your kids everything?
Yeah, right?
Not everything?
That's not the strategy that I would recommend. Yeah, no. But the year-end deadline is a real thing, and that's where you have to walk through, okay, how much should I contribute? And then each state has a different rule on how much is deductible. This is a state deduction, not a federal deduction. And from there, you can kind of back into the contribution amounts. So the gifting thing, Cameron, works great. I've got my relatives now. No more teddy bears, no more
that's
Legos.
Great.
And I get a little card, and it says,
I love that.
You know, happy holidays, whatever it is, birthday, whatever it might be, and here's the contribution we made to the 529.
It doesn't need to be big gifts. I think the Lincoln, Ohio is, what, $25?
Yeah, minimum,
not a huge.
It used to be EE bonds.
Yep.
Back in the day.
I used to sell candy bars for those.
Did you?
Door to door, yeah.
No way.
Morley candy bars.
Oh, that's funny.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we still have some of those EE bonds. Actually.
Probably do, yeah.
Yeah, floating
around. A lot of people do, and they find them in the drawer.
What do you do with those?
Go to treasury.gov, type in the serial number of the bond and see what it's worth, and then go, oh, crap, I need to get that money, and
so
cash it in.
Let's go to the bank?
Banks will do it. You can do it online. Actually, mail mine in.
I hate to burst the bubble. It's probably not going to be a life-changing amount of money.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, interest rates were good, though, back in the 80s and 90s, right? So
yeah, but isn't it only worth what the actual maturity
amount? Yeah, there's a cap, yeah. Then it just stops accruing interest, yeah.
Okay. All right, insurance reviews. Let's talk about insurance coverage again. Assessing the right amount of coverage, the right type of coverage. This is a good time to do that, both for open enrollment and to evaluate your family situation for the next year. I mean, we've got loved ones and family members that are having babies that are due after the first of the year. That's a good trigger to kind of assess your insurance, right?
Yeah, health, life, disability insurance in particular, great time of the year because you're going through probably open enrollment with your work, and then compare that with what you could get personally. If you need more than what your work offers, or if your work doesn't offer anything, that's a good time of the year. Auto, you know, thinking like auto and home insurance, umbrella insurance, that's kind of like estate planning. You can do it at any time of the year. It's not really a bad time to do it.
we did a couple of shows actually in the recent past, if anybody's interested, on some of the companies that will help you find the best insurance companies and best rates at no cost to you. So give those a listen. So as far as shopping for better rates, that's an overwhelming, to me personally, that is one aspect of financial planning that overwhelms me, is the insurance conversation.
Which just part of it?
All of the language, deciphering through the language, everything is in a chart, everything is in spreadsheets, and my brain just wants to scream when I look at it. It definitely is overwhelming.
A lot of it isn't in a different language. Estate planning and insurance, it sometimes feels like it's written in legalese, which is why
it is.
You know, shameless plug. We see hundreds of those per year. So like, I feel like we are at least semi fluent in some of that.
Yeah, I'm looking at his body language. He's like, yeah, that's not a big problem.
My brain
does not think that way.
And if there's something we don't know, you know, we're not prideful enough to say, you know, just say we know it. We go to the expert, whether that's the insurance broker, the attorney, and we ask questions.
Mm-hmm. Right. Debt management strategies. So at the end of the year, you know, you've still got a good chunk of debt built up. Is there a best practice for preparing for next year, or is there a methodology to handling that by December 31st?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I don't really think there's a year-end deadline to it necessarily. The interest is going to keep ticking along, right? So you got to really develop the strategy around how do you change your behaviors, change your cash flow to make sure you don't repeat what you did perhaps that prior year. But
it's shoe season.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's shoe season. Yeah.
It's a real thing, right? Everybody's kind of got their own ways they spend their money, and we're not here to tell people yes or no, but if they come to us and say, hey, how do I pay this down? Well, then we have to have that conversation about changing behaviors. And it's, of course, you would tackle the higher interest things first, which there's a lot of those, sadly, these days. But I think from a planning standpoint, you really got to reset what your goals are, and that's what this time of year typically is thought of. And then you get into the New Year's resolutions, which I'm sure we'll do a show on that. But paying down that interest debt, it really, the type of debt makes a difference as well. You know, credit card debts tend to be the ones that are not great. Personal loans, bridge loans.
This is the time the credit card debt starts to increase because of the holidays coming.
Every time you go to a checkout online, or even when you're in the store, you know, do you want to apply for the store credit card, or
save 25%? Or
run. Yeah, don't do that.
Right.
Or even, in my opinion, at least even worse is the buy now pay later options, because if you do the math, it comes out to be like 40% interest.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
On those, you know, on the $100 toy that you bought for your kid.
Yeah, yeah. What about sort of reconsidering your loans from the first of the year to now, you know, and maybe considering refinancing or reevaluating, consolidating, handling just general debt? Is there, it's probably based, I would assume, on less on deadline, less on time, and more on your cash flow.
Yep.
So there's nothing I'm missing there.
You got it.
Yeah. And lastly, financial goal reviews. This is a big one for us, is what we do every day. So how do you suggest people start first five steps of evaluating their financial goals in order to meet their end of year deadlines? If you were to say trigger point number one is?
It's all about cash flow. So approaching the end of the year, are you where you thought you would be in January? And you got to be honest with yourself, right? Sometimes you have good years, sometimes you have bad years, but you got to evaluate where you're at, know where your feet are, and then you can start thinking about the following calendar year. But assess where you're at, and it goes back to the business owners as well, working on their income statements. What other expenses do they have coming up towards the end of the year that they haven't paid yet, but they know they're there? And then from that standpoint, too, it's about, I think you got to have a realistic conversation with short-term goals, so a year or less, intermediate term goals, 2 to 5 years, and then the long term, and kind of categorize those into different buckets. And some of those may be on your list now that were long term. They're actually in front of you, and it's time to take action and implement. So from a saving standpoint, though, it's, we'll say it again over and over again, always pay yourself first. So look at your cash flow. Can you squeeze any more out of it? Is there any more that can go towards tomorrow, not today? Especially if you're still in your 30s, 40s, 50s, at prime earning careers. When you get into your 60s, late 60s, early 70s, you start talking about the withdrawal stage, right, in retirement. So kind of assessing where you're at, the goals could go different directions based upon the individual. But I think just knowing where you stand today is the starting point.
Being in your 20s and 30s, when someone says to you, pay yourself first, but only pay yourself, what, 10% is it? Is that the magic number that we talk about?
As far as saving?
Paying yourself first.
Yeah, which is how much you're going to save, right? So
right.
It probably needs to be more like 20, 25% of your income.
I think there's a temptation when you're speaking as the resident 20-something in the room. I think there's temptation like early on in your career, even when you're still going through school. I have all the time in the world. And I can take, you know, not only is it I can wait to start doing that, you know, or
yep.
I can, if I am starting to do that, I can take all the risk in the world and
yep.
I can, you know, make up for it later. But I think there's something to say, if you start doing the right things now mm-hmm. and you do the right things for 30, 40, 50 years, you're going to be much further ahead than the other two groups who took too much risk early on, didn't really have a goal. I think a lot of risk taking has a lack of setting good goals. Not starting. I mean, we've probably gone through. I'm sure we've had many podcasts of the classic exercise of okay, what's the cost of waiting, and that can really come to bite people by even just delaying starting to work towards whatever goals they are, retirement, saving for a house, whatever. Starting the way. If you wait to start, you're really going to be hurting your future self.
It's very hard to tell a 20-year-old or even an early 30-year-old. When they get a $50 bump in their pay every month, just put it away. Don't touch it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm already stretched to the gills. Now they're seeing they don't have to be so stretched, but they really could tweak in some areas that they're not willing to do. So it's pure emotion. I mean, I've been there. I was the description you just gave, that was me. I was never taught how to handle money. I wasn't taught how to you know, manage a checkbook. I had to hit the wall several thousand times before I figured it out, learned to do my own taxes at one point. I mean, I was able to get there, but, man, it took a long time. And a lot of you know, money shame, money guilt, looking back on it, good Lord, if I had known then what I know now, especially after working here. So don't be headstrong, but how do you help a 20, 30-year-old person understand that pennies turned into big dollars. If you could just, it's yeah. hard. It's all psychological.
Sure. There's a lot of new tools now that weren't there even 20 years ago that we can show people, especially the younger generations. And
like what?
I just think we have a calculator we use called the cost delay. You know, if you wait 1 year, what's that going to cost you? And it's typically hundreds of thousands of dollars just by waiting 1 year to start saving. So and that's a whole other topic too, but the conversation, but the idea there is, I think, especially with younger generations, showing them a visual,
mm-hmm.
that's the key.
I think that's why they like social media.
No, of course.
That's why
yeah.
they buy into it. Because,
and it's got to be quick. It's got to be succinct. It's got to be to the mm-hmm. point. 30 seconds or less, right? All those things. So that's the thing, is less is more.
I think write an app for that.
Good, yeah.
I think I always tell my friends that, you know, being a mature saver, being a mature investor is 10% math and 90% behavior. And the most mature saver investor is disciplined.
True for any age.
Yeah.
True for any age. I mean, admittedly,
it translates. I mean, it's not just saving and investing. If you treat your body well, if you exercise, if you develop that habit or any other habit, you're going and you do that for years and years and years, you're going to have a super refined habit that you're never going to think twice about when you're 50 and you can run a marathon.
You just have to decide: do I want it now or do I want it later? I mean, that's really the bottom line. And some of us are more pigheaded than others, and it takes a lot longer to figure out the answer to that.
With the kids, too, in particular, they've got apps for everything, like you said. But if they can just go in there and be disciplined enough to take, you know, 25 of that $50 raise and automate it, mm-hmm. increase their contribution rate, do it one time, and then you don't touch it again.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, just pay yourself first.
Okay, I'm going to let you take the do's, and I'm going to let you take the don'ts. So give me 5 do's for end of year deadlines.
One do is talk to your CPA, work with the CPA, figure out. I think the worst thing when it comes to taxes is being surprised. If, you know, a lot of people get raises at the end of the year, whether that's a little bump in pay or a big profit sharing bonus, whatever, make sure you're withholding enough for taxes so you don't have to write a big check to the IRS in April. I think another one is, take a look at your pay stub. You know, we're talking about retirement contributions, open enrollment. What benefits do you have? How much have you put towards those benefits this year? Is there a wiggle room where, based off of your current cash flow, could you
maximize your retirement account at work. Well, then your pay stub would show you how much more can you maximize it by. Whether that's a couple percent, so whether that's by some, we have some people who bump their income because they can do it by, they put 100% of their pay for maybe the last two paychecks to be able to maximize their pay or their 401k. So just being mindful of, again, it all starts with a goal.
Wait, can I backtrack? You mean they go all year long and they don't contribute, and then they take their, they allocate their last two.
They might just not be either not contributing to it or not even thinking about contributing to their 401k, maybe just putting like 2 or 3% in, and then they get to the end of the year and they have the income to do it, but they just put 100% of their last two paychecks or whatever, and they can hit that maximum contribution for the year.
Never thought to do that. Okay, that's three. What about, give me another one.
More?
Yeah. I said five. You got two more.
Oh, man.
Slacking off over here.
I think the FSA one's a good one. Be mindful of where that stands. Did you have the expected amount of health expenses that you thought you'd have this time last year? And if not, if you have a big balance on that FSA account, know that you can only roll over $600 or so to next year. So find things, whether, you know, like Tyler said, whether it's Advil or
stocking stuffers for the family.
I even think of things like, if you've been putting off getting braces for getting your kids braces, that's a big expense. You might end up paying a lot of pocket, but you're going to get some of that tax-free, tax advantage. The money's already set aside for that.
Gym memberships and massage therapy included those in that?
Can be.
Yeah. As a doctor's note?
Yep.
Hmm. Yep.
So have a good relationship with your doctor. Yeah. Right. Okay, one last one from you.
I don't know. Might have to
Help him out.
Might have to call a friend.
Okay. Yeah, loop in. Make sure you're engaged with your other professionals in your financial life, right? So meeting with the CPA at the end of the year is a big one. We've kind of talked about the tax strategy, but actually having the expert take a peek at that is key. If you have a financial planner, somebody like us, making sure that they're aware of any changes towards the end of the year and just staying proactive as you turn the calendar year. So a lot of do's. There are some don'ts, though, right? So the don'ts, don't wait. Don't wait till the last minute. We're all procrastinators in some sense of our lives. So we try to be proactive with our clients and be the ones to remind them of some of the deadlines. And that's the thing, too, is these, especially open enrollment is a big deadline right now for a lot of people. It's easy to just click the button and assume everything's the same as last year. That's another don't assume it's the same. Mm-hmm. So ignore those deadlines can cost you the next year. And you, now you've got to wait another 12 months to reset. You only get that one window. The other thing, too, is like we said about life circumstances, we have even just our staff here. It's fun to see just growing families and things like that. And this is the time to be proactive and plan ahead for that new child or marriage or whatever it might be, buying a house. But again, be aware of your timeline with those, as I said, about your goals, right? You got to be short term, intermediate, and long term. And then, Tracy, don't react, right? Don't neglect your budget. Don't make rash decisions.
I take umbrage.
Yeah.
I take umbrage.
Okay. I just think, you know, it's the making rash decisions too. And it's more about, I think this time of year too, at the holidays, it's about it's here today, gone tomorrow. Financial planning is not that, right? It's an ongoing thing. And so if you can stay disciplined to the goals you set out at the start of the year, you'll be happy when you set your new set of goals here, in which will be another show.
Fantastic. That's been great. Thank you very much. That's it for today. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you in on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.